T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Happy Giving Tuesday. Welcome to the Andy Fry Show. Thanks for tuning in to us. Appreciate that you've chosen to spend a little bit of your time with us today. Lots going on. This stimulus package discussion still taking place. I was listening to Kilmeade leading in here, and he was talking to Bret Baier, and they're discussing the likelihood of this. Bret Baier said, I think it was Bret Baier that said, that we could possibly see the rise of the moderate out of the makeup of government that we have right now. And I want to be like, how do we even know what the makeup of the government is right now? We don't have a president-elect. I mean, the media has their president-elect, which they've had for a while. Let's just be honest about that. That's not brand new information. But we don't, you know, we are not one way or the other at a point where one side can look at the other and be like, you need to be quiet now because this is done and over with, and this is who's going to become president or maintain their presidency as of January. We don't have that yet. Wouldn't it be, I guess the word is unity. Wouldn't it be unifying if we could just wait for the process to play out and use words like, you know, it looks likely that Joe Biden will be the president, but Donald Trump has lawsuits out there that are intending to go up to the Supreme Court and possibly could change things, but we will know when we know. There's an electoral college that's going to cast their votes in December, and then we'll know. But we aren't like that, because we are very much so invested as a media entity. We are invested in an outcome. And that's where people like you and me, when we're watching TV, when we're watching our news channels, we see right through it. We know what we're getting, but it's becoming a lot of work. Katie and Ryan, how much do you watch cable news? Like, let's say, you know, let's say March of this year, pandemic is starting, impeachment is ending. How much time a day do you spend watching cable news?
I would say about an hour to an hour and a half a day. I'll watch cable news. Yeah.
Is it? And how much do you watch right now? More? Less?
About the same. About the same. Mm-hmm.
What about you, Ryan?
You know, the bulk of the news that I watched on cable was because it was on in our office and we were, you know, constantly watching it for updates. Now I don't. I just watch sort of internet sites for news.
Because you don't want to watch it, or because you're in a different location? I'm talking about your habits.
Yeah, it's both. I don't really want to watch it.
So my habits have changed dramatically. I don't want to turn on the news, which is not necessarily the most beneficial thing for me here, because that means I have to do other things to get my news. I have to source what is going on from different places. I watched Tucker last night, and I don't ever regret watching Tucker Carlson. He always makes me laugh. He is, as I always say, teetering on the edge of insanity, because we all are. And it's nice to see somebody out there who's just putting it out there straight for you. Tucker, I think, is doing the very best job with that. But if we get to the point where we get fatigue on news, that's going to be bad for the cable news channels. And they're going to feel it. And they are feeling it. If we continue, yesterday we were talking, Katie, you were talking about how people are going to be disinterested in politics, if Donald Trump is out and Joe Biden is in. The idea is to make you complacent and uninterested, so that you just kind of, it's a thing that happens. It's like the grown-ups are over here. We're not sitting at the grown-ups table, but they're taking care of business over there. It's probably important, but that's why they're there. They're there to do the important stuff and to manage things, and I want to go about living my life. Well, you know, that has become problematic over the course of time when that's how we've looked at it as a whole process, is you take your hands off the wheel. The wheel is yours to have. The wheel is yours. It is not the people in Washington, D.C. It's not the people in Jefferson City, Missouri. It's not the people in Springfield, Illinois. It's yours. And if you want to take a left turn or a right turn driving down the road at any time, you have the power and the authority to do that frequently. But if you become complacent, if you become bored with it, if you are just exhausted, like I said, fatigue, then they get to drive that car down the road. And then you go, wait a second, where are we? How did we get here? And that's because you kind of got sick of it. I completely understand that. I am there right now with cable news. It's like we needed a break. And I thought last night, like, will I be back to watching as much as I did before? I don't know. I don't know. I think it's one of those things that 2020 has taught us, like, when you have to separate with something, you ask yourself, like, do I have to put this back into my life? And when you put this back into your life, do you want it to be there? Or do you kind of like, you know what? I don't know that I really need it this way. We're going to have to, especially here on the show, and I'm very interested in what you guys have to think about this. And watching us on Facebook, watching us on YouTube, if you're able to comment here, we love reading your comments. How do you intend to follow this? Do you want to know more now than ever, especially considering the fact that maybe somebody who is leading the country in the office, in the Oval Office, is not going to be somebody who's going to be leading it with the intent that you want them to be? Do you want to know more than ever what's going on? Or is it to the point where you're not going to like what you're going to hear on a day-to-day basis, so you're going to tune it out? I'm curious how you feel about it, because as we move through December and move into January and this gets settled one way or the other, we're going to have to be making those choices. And the truth is that, you know, myself and Katie, as we put the show together, Ryan, the three of us are going to have to figure out how to bring this information to you on a daily basis where you still want to hear it, and also give you the breaks that you are going to want to have and the breaks that you're going to need to be able to maintain a day-to-day relationship with you right here on the show. I see a lot of people saying that you've changed it up, that you've made just rearranged or limited the amount of time that you've had. Beth is on the line. Let's take Beth's call here. 314-241-9797. Beth, thanks for calling.
Hey, Annie. First of all, I want to say that I love your show. I have changed everything because I was so disappointed and just in turmoil with everything going on. So I switched to Newsmax.
Yeah.
And I laid off the Facebook and went to Parler. And, you know, aesthetically, it's not what I'm used to, right? Because I'm used mm-hmm. to having cable news on all the time. But I talk to my friends who are, like, incessantly angry about the news.
Yeah.
You know, I'll be like, gosh, I miss it, you know, because it was always on in the background. And I like Newsmax. It's not what it's not what I'm used to. It's not the Fox News I'm used to. Just putting it out there. But I'm not mad.
Mm-hmm. So. It's a mental health situation.
It's a, like, you know, I mean, I listen to my mom and she's like, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, gosh, see, I don't have that on my, mm-hmm. on my station. Aesthetically, it's a bummer, but mental health wise, I'm like, hey, you know, I'm not getting fact checked on Facebook, on Parler. So it's different. It's like a breakup, Annie. I feel like I've had a breakup.
It takes some time. Beth, thank you for calling. And thank you for sticking with us. We really do appreciate that. It is a little bit. I mean, if Trump's not going to be the president, it's going to be, you're probably already feeling some of this. Speaking of things that I watch instead of news right now, I watched a 3.5-hour special of John Mayer's concert tour.
Nice.
Katie, the one that you and I went to
together.
And it was piecing together songs that he did in all of these different places on his world tour and everything. And I was watching all of it. Loved it. Took me 3 sittings to watch the whole thing. But he has a song called Slow Dancing in a Burning Room. And it's about, like, being at the end of a relationship where you're still in the relationship, but the room is on fire around you. And I'm like, so this is my problem. I relate everything back to politics. I'm like, this is very familiar. And Jared looks at me like, what? And I'm like, no, not you. We're good. everything here is fine. Politics, on the other hand, news and the way we consume it, you know, it's really going to be a time for us, and by us, I mean myself and Katie and Ryan, to come up with innovative ways to do this thing that we have with you. This, you know, it's easy for me to come on here and be like, Trump did this, yay, and Trump did that, yay. And sometimes I'm coming on here and saying, Trump did this, I wish he wouldn't have done it that way. I wish he would have delivered it in a different way. But, you know, I would say on the whole, what, 9 out of 10, and that's probably a conservative estimate, of what Donald Trump has done from a policy and an action standpoint, I'm like, yes, this is great. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be like that with Biden. And I remember being, you know, I've been with 97.1 since the very beginning of 2009. I was there right after Obama was inaugurated. So I've done 8 years of this with Obama in office. I was just in the background. I was supporting the air staff that was here from that time through 2018 when I came on the air full time. It's a different animal. But the truth is that I think that if Biden is the guy who gets in, we still will find ourselves needing a place where you can go and maybe let a little bit of the steam off, let a little bit of the steam out. And even when you're not talking about, you know, this press briefing and this moment by moment detail of what took place that day, you're still in a position where, for the most part, you're with people who are open-minded or like-minded, and hopefully both. Like-minded in the sense that we love this country. Maybe our policies are different. Maybe you and I are in lockstep on gun issues, but you have a different thought on how we should fund education. I saw the other day that the headline was Joe Biden promises to go after charter schools. And I'm like, that's what he's going to work on. That's his focus. Okay, buckle up. I mean, this is stuff that we're going to have to figure out how we move through together. Hopefully together. You know, the truth is here, folks, I need you more than you need me. And I want to make sure that what we do here on this show, on this station, is serving the people who choose to come here. I know you choose. I know it's a choice. And I know that there, especially at this time of the day, you've got choices. So we want to be something that you can come to. We want to be a place that you can relax, take your shoes off, and stay a while. Boy, I hope it would be a lot nicer if Trump would win some of these lawsuits and we would.
Yes.
It makes it so much easier for me. But boy, if that happens, you want to talk about buckle up. It's going to be serious.
Annie, can I make one quick caveat to my answer before about the news stuff? I might not have changed my habits. Beth brought this up and I thought it was great. I might not have changed my habits completely on watching the news, but mm-hmm. I've certainly changed my habits on what I'm doing on social media. And I think that has social
How
media.
How has that changed?
Less and less. I'm trying not to be on those platforms as much as I used to and be so glued to them because I just can't stand it anymore. It's like watching these pundits regurgitate all of this misinformation on and on and on. That's how social media has become for me. Everybody just has an opinion. They want to be loud. And a lot of the information that they're spewing isn't accurate. Mm-hmm. So it's just been really, really hard. And I feel like social media has now come under the umbrella of news. They're becoming one.
Fake news.
Yes.
Yeah. Like, you can't be the anti-fact checker.
Mm-hmm.
You can be, but what kind of life is that when you're on your social media outlet and you're talking to your friends where the original button was to like, and now, you know, it is interesting because the point there, Katie, is that whether you're there or not, it's still happening. Mm-hmm. It's 100% ball in your court, whether you choose to participate in it, which means that you actually do hold the power to keep yourself from being consumed from it. But then you got to turn it off. Also, I'll add, today Facebook changed back to the new Facebook to me, and I'm going to throw my computer through the door.
No. Yeah, oh, the new one. Oh, no.
Yeah. I only will use Facebook on my phone now, which this happened like months ago, and I was like, I'm not using this. So I started using my phone, and then I went back to my Facebook on my laptop, and it was back to the way it had used to be. And when I opened it today, and I'm like, are you dumping me without telling me? Like, if you want me to go away, just don't load. When I click Facebook.com, just don't load. All right, this song goes out to Joe Biden. We'll be right back.
While we should not deliver another major pandemic relief package to help the American people through what seems poised to be the last chapters of this battle. This morning, we got yet another major sign of hope. More data appear to confirm that the vaccine developed by Moderna is more than 94% effective.
So there's Senator Mitch McConnell talking about there's a little over $800 billion stimulus bill that's out there right now being discussed, and sounds like there's some bipartisan support. So work is still being done there. And don't forget, in the midst of all of the conversation about the presidential election, we have had an enormously successful red wave down ticket, and we still have Georgia. Everything is looking at Georgia right now. And to give us a little bit of an idea about how the RNC is feeling about that, we've got Cassie Smedley on the phone with us right now. She's the Deputy Communications Director for the RNC, joining us right now over the phone. Cassie, great to have you back on the show. Thanks for coming on with us.
Hey, Annie. It's so funny. I'm seeing you on my Twitter feed, and then now I'm talking to you.
Yeah.
You've got it on all angles.
and now we've got your Twitter profile up there as well. I want to ask you about Georgia and the RNC. How are you feeling about the likelihood of at least one, hopefully two wins there in that very important state?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, we feel good so far as everything continues to work as it should. And what do I mean by that? A few things. One, Senators Kelly Loeffler and David Perdue did incredibly well in their initial races back, which was on election day. They didn't quite meet that 50% threshold, but they still way outperformed their closest competitors. And then in Kelly Loeffler's case, when you combine with Doug Collins and what he was able to get, so now you put all the Republican support together, it should look very good for both of them. Add to that, though, because, of course, we're saying let's not take this for granted. We've got to get out the vote. We've got over 500 staff, thousands of volunteers, all barnstorming Georgia. They've been making more than 1 million voter contacts with doors and phones, 1.5 million when you include phones, a week. That's huge. That's what we often do nationally through all the battleground states during the general election. So to be doing that in 1 week just shows the sheer depth and breadth of our operation, but also the enthusiasm on the ground. And then, of course, add to that that we have the president coming in town this weekend, and no one can turn out our supporters like the president. And so all of those forces together point to a really good direction for Georgia. But we have to keep the pressure on. We know, I mean, just today it's come out, Georgia Secretary of State has talked about how one of Ralph Warnock, who is the guy running against Kelly Loeffler, his progressive group with Stacey Abrams, they are actively trying to illegally make people register to vote in Georgia who are not residents of Georgia. And that's a felony there. And the Secretary of State saying, we're going to go after you. But that just goes to show that on the left, there are real forces at play to try and undermine the integrity of this election, to try and do whatever they can to steal this vote. And so we feel confident in the numbers and in the enthusiasm if everything is done legally. And we've got all of our eyes and ears on the ground, of course, for the president, but also for this runoff to make sure that those sorts of efforts are being flagged and curbed.
Cassie Smedley is Deputy Communications Director for the RNC on the phone with us. Cassie, is there any concern about turnout in Georgia with a lot of people? I've seen a lot of people saying, yeah, we're going to turn out in greater forces, but then others saying, well, either we lost the presidential race, so we're going to throw our hands up, or we don't trust the process or whatever. How's the RNC handling that?
Absolutely huge to have the president in Georgia this weekend, because Georgians know that they are ground zero to hold the line in the Senate. Georgians know that they are the last line of defense against Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi and the squad's leftist agenda. I mean, Chuck Schumer said, first we take Georgia, then we take the country. This is their opening, as they see it, for getting their radical agenda through. This is their last best stand. And so Georgians know this incredible responsibility that they have, and we feel confident that they're going to turn out and vote on January 5th, if not before. But to have the president down in the Peach State also showing that unity within the party, showing the unity for the causes that make our country great, that all lies with the Republican Party today, with President Trump on down the ballot. And so we know that there can be no choice but to turn out and vote for these great candidates, Senators Loeffler and Perdue. And we feel confident that people will. But it's always nice to have the president coming down to your state to just drive it home a bit more. So we're excited to have him.
Okay, so Cassie, I hear the you know, future Biden administration, we'll wait and see on that, but I see them tweeting out, they're bragging about this all-female communications team, and then, you know, Kayleigh McEnany has something to say about that. I'm looking at the GOP. You're the Deputy Communications Director for the GOP. We've had countless other female Republicans from the GOP on this show to talk about and give us an update on what's going on in the country. And again, talking down ticket from the presidential race, this year in 2020. This has been a banner year for women in the Republican Party. And unfortunately, because of the top of the ticket, it's really not getting, who knows if it would even get the press that it deserves to begin with.
Right.
What do you, you know, how proud are you to be a leader in this GOP party effort and see all of these new voices coming in to represent their constituents because they were the right person for the job, not just because they're women?
Absolutely. 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 And we know that so well. I think as Republicans, I don't know if you caught Dana Perino had a real honest moment yesterday on her show.
I've got that right here. Let me play it here real quick because this is a very honest moment.
The Obama administration did this a lot too. There was like, this is the first. If you think of last week, the new DHS secretary will be the first Hispanic Americans, the first. A lot. Now, there's nothing wrong with that. And if you think you want to get a quick hit in the media, you know exactly how to do it. Conservative administrations typically don't do that. Mm-hmm. And also, as conservative women, you just are like, you know you're not going to get the glowing profile, so you just get your done.
Right. Oh! She said it on the five. And all these conservative women are like, yeah, that's pretty much right.
Yeah.
What do you think about that?
That's right. Well, and you know, you see the squad, and I mean, even look at our first lady, didn't get one major magazine cover, and she's
unbelievable.
You know, fashion icon. And we know that. And so you do it with the results, you do it with your work, you do the work that they can't ignore. And, you know, go back to Kellyanne Conway. She was the first woman to run a successful presidential campaign, not Joe Biden's, if that's how it ends up. But they also, of course, are talking about Joe Biden's campaign manager, and they want to gloss over Kellyanne Conway's achievements. You mentioned Kayleigh McEnany. Currently, right now, in this White House, you had Sarah Huckabee Sanders, who was the first mother, to be the press secretary. Then you have Kayleigh McEnany leading the helm of the comm staff there now, which is all women, the senior staff, including with the VP's office and the first lady's office. So they, you know, rush to put all these headlines and believing that they can create their own narrative, but they can't create their own facts. But I would point you to the work of course, our chairwoman, Ronna McDaniel, with Elise Stefanik, wonderful congresswoman out of New York, and so many others who came together to say, we know we have the right people who want to be candidates. What's keeping them from putting their name on a ballot? And let's work on lowering those barriers. So from the RNC perspective, we made a lot of inroads to make sure everybody had access to good data for free. Every Republican candidate also talked a lot about fundraising, all of those things that are huge barriers to entry for successful campaigns. And so we love the results that we're seeing from these awesome candidates who are wonderful representatives of their communities, going to be ushering in, I think it's 14 women and 14 flips that we've had. And they're really wonderful new members of Congress, whether they be women or minorities or immigrants or veterans, all of the above. And what I love most about them, not only their stories and that their constituents feel that they have greater and better and stronger representation in Congress for them, but that the people who voted them into Congress are also as diverse as we've ever had, I think, since 1960. Our Republican voters are also are broadening tent. You know, President Trump did that. President Trump said the forgotten men and women of America will be forgotten no more. And here we saw in droves, because of his policies, that people who had never voted before, or certainly had never voted for a Republican before, had been told their whole lives that they only voted Democrat. And they said, excuse me, I've got a mind for myself and I'm voting Republican. And they did it. And that's why we're seeing this incredible new class of elected officials in Congress for Republicans. And why, again, I think we're going to see, bringing it back home to Georgia with Senators Loeffler and Perdue, that it's going to be some of those very same folks who voted for President Trump and Republicans this past November. They're going to do it again on January 5th because they know that it's Republicans who share their values and are fighting for them.
Yeah, you know, even Amy Coney Barrett, like when Donald Trump announces her name and people are saying, can she really be a good mom and a Supreme Court justice? I'm like, I do not understand how to play the identity politics game. Like, I feel like I've studied up and I've read enough about it and I've seen enough that I think I know how this game is played. And then the president nominates a woman, a very accomplished woman, and they're like, can she be a good mom and a good justice at the same time? And I'm like, nope, I don't get it. I didn't read that set of rules.
Right.
It's really unbelievable. The goalposts are always moving.
That's what I was just about to say. Talk about moving goalposts. And, you know, it's just sort of a funny quip real quick. I was at an exhibit at the National Portrait Gallery, which is awesome. If you have a chance to visit D.C. in non-COVID times, it's a great place to go see all the presidential portraits. And they had this exhibit on women in particular, like first ladies. But right as you enter into that, there's this huge portrait of the female Supreme Court justices. And I'm walking with my girlfriends and we stopped and we said, oh, they need to update that portrait. And these two people kind of looked and like glared at us. And we said, they do. They're missing a really great new woman. And I had this thought of, really? You can't celebrate that we have not only another woman on the Supreme Court, which, you know, love that, but also this objectively, incredibly brilliant and qualified person on the Supreme Court. It's just kind of wild to me that they can't get past that just because she doesn't, you know, identify as a liberal or won't mm-hmm. acquiesce to what the culture warriors want of her, or whatever. But but it is very exciting. I love that you brought her up. And again, this is something that President Trump also identified. We've heard from people who have worked for his companies for decades who say, you know, he hired me because I was the best person for the job, even when it wasn't common that a woman held this role. He saw that I would do the best job. And you see that as he has approached his campaigns, as he's approached the White House, as he has approached his nominations, always saying, well, who's the best person for the job? And isn't it pretty incredible that so often there still end up being women who get those positions who maybe are the first of their kind, even if the media won't give them their due credit for that.
Yeah. I'll never understand when people say, well, we're only going to choose from women. It just doesn't make you feel like if you've accomplished right. getting that, securing that position, that you were the best person for the job. If you're the best mm-hmm. woman for the job, you've eliminated half of the population. I mean, that can't make you feel... Right. Like you really achieved, you know, the greatest achievement there. But we've seen so much of that with the Republican
right.
Party. Go ahead.
That's right. And one thought on that, I think as women, as voters, and as people, you know, even just how we make our decision for things we're going to buy or, you know, organizations we're going to get involved in, it's funny how we do our research based on what makes the most sense. I just think that the gender almost comes second to that. It's like a bonus if it ends up that way. So it's funny that in particular, the left and the media and pop culture try and keep pushing that and pushing that and pushing that. But as women, we're going, well, if you're going to do the best work and fight for me and my family, then I'll give you a chance. And we happen to also think that, you know, women are great voices to have at the table. But it's funny how it seems almost counter to how women, we often make our own decisions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love the you know, come into the GOP and think for yourself. And generally speaking, when people yeah. realize it's the open-minded side of the aisle, they get comfy mm-hmm. and they stay a while. Cassie, great to speak with
Love
you.
That.
Hope you had a wonderful Thanksgiving and continue to have a great holiday season, however you're choosing to celebrate it. We're thankful you came on with us today.
Love being with you, Annie. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Bye-bye. Cassie Smedley, the Deputy Communications Director for the GOP. And yes, she is a woman, and I don't know what that has to do with her qualifying for the job. But Katie, I interviewed all the women for this executive producer job, and you are the best woman.
Gosh, I feel so
Ryan
good
would
about
have
myself.
Been a better executive producer, but since he's a dude...
Yeah, since
I even
I'm a
came
girl.
Into the interview like full on bosom buddies, and I still didn't.
you didn't pass, Ryan.
And now you know why you didn't hit the gym.
Yeah. Wait a minute. It was something else
whoa,
in play
whoa.
Here.
Also, I had nothing to do with hiring the position. So
and I didn't shave my beard.
I don't want anybody to think that these people work for me. They work with me, and I'm grateful for them. Let's take a quick break and react to some of that from Cassie Smedley when we come back. You can join us on our Facebook Live, facebook.com/AnnieFryShow, and the Annie Fry YouTube page. We're also streaming at radio.com. If you ever want to listen to 97.1 FM Talk, you can download the radio.com app on your phone, and you can listen to the whole station here anytime from anywhere. It's pretty cool. We'll be back in just a minute. This is Gavin DeGraw, right?
It is.
So Gavin DeGraw's got one of those voices that I generally don't like, but then I hear this song, and I'm like, sing to me, Gavin.
So good.
It's a little, you know, like every once in a while.
Mm-hmm. But he has that song that you were, A Brother with Need to Breathe. And that's a great, great song.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm a fan of that song. No, I can't. What's the other real catchy little bebop that didn't he do?
Yeah, the One Tree Hill. Gosh, okay, that's the wrong example.
What's One Tree Hill? Oh, that's a show, right?
Yeah, that show. I know it.
Did you watch, Ryan, I don't know, Katie, if you were old enough to, maybe Katie watched like the seasons later. Did you watch like Dawson's Creek and stuff?
Oh my gosh. Everybody I knew.
Is that an admission or a no?
Everybody I knew.
Oh my gosh. It's a bombshell.
I was at the age where I basically just hated those shows with such a burning passion.
There were so many of them.
Yes. And I loathed all of them. And not just the shows. I loathed that they were part of the culture that I had to live in.
I don't like that her name was Joey, and I don't like that she used seven-syllable words every other word. I couldn't get over it. I'm like, I know nobody who speaks this way.
Yes.
And she does it, and I couldn't get over it. I've never watched it, and I just read somebody who is probably your age, Katie, because you would have been small.
Yes, and I remember Dawson's Creek, but I also remember specifically, because I have an older sister, my mom saying...
You were not allowed to watch it.
And neither was my sister.
Yeah.
She's like, absolutely not. No.
I don't know that I was supposed to watch it, which wasn't a problem because I wasn't gonna.
Yeah.
But I just... Like, I remember it was so angsty and so forced, or I don't know. There's this person who wrote an article for something who's about your age, Katie, and she's like, you know, I've heard about this. I've been ashamed to say I've never watched it before. I don't know why she was ashamed, but she binged the whole thing, and because I guess it's on Netflix or something. And she was talking about how amazing of a show it was. And I was like, I don't really know. I don't really know if it was. And I'm like, did I, as a teenager, because they were, I mean, what was it? The late 90s?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Did it go into the 2000s?
Yes.
I think so.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I graduated high school in 2002. Sue Lynn says on Facebook, what kind of name is Pacey? I don't know. But I was okay with Pacey.
It was
but
the
also
one,
him in the Mighty Ducks. James Vanderbeek was always crying, and he was always chasing this girl, and I didn't know, it just was...
Yeah, 1998 was the first series,
yeah,
the first
sounds
season.
About right.
So yeah, so I feel like they were pretty much my age-ish. Mm-hmm. Like, it would have been very relatable, but no, I didn't watch it.
Man, you talk about forced dialogue. Gilmore Girls, and I know I'm going to make some enemies by saying that, but
I never watched any of that either.
It's the same type. Yeah, it's that same concept.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like big words.
Faster than you can speak in real
life. On top of each other.
Yes.
Yes.
That's just like, Office.
No.
I said
don't you dare say The Office.
Office Max.
It's just like an Office Max, you guys. Every time you're at Office
I go
Max,
in there and I yell at everybody. I'm like, why are you talking over each other? It's
so
rude.
Fast.
And nobody uses words that big. Stop it. Say two-syllable words
just
or smaller.
Said stapler, ma'am.
It's stapler. Make it two. I remember tuning into Gilmore Girls and watching and going, I don't like this. Yeah. Like, it doesn't make me feel good. But then, what's the show? The Office. Office Space is the movie. Mm-hmm. The show is The Office. I like Office Space. The Office, I cannot get past the first person camera thing. Yep. I can't get past it. It's so distracting. I think that I would enjoy it. I want to enjoy it. I can't do it.
You know what? I put The Office on a lot, and it's going away soon from Netflix. So David and I are trying to rewatch the series. And last night, as we were falling asleep, we turn on The Office, and the first darn thing that happens, Annie, is a shaky camera. It's and I said, I never
awful.
Noticed this before
yes.
until Annie pointed it out.
Sorry. Once you see it, it's hard to think about. It's hard to watch what's going on and not think about the camera. Because Parks and Rec is the same thing too, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yep.
So many people tell me I'd love Parks and Rec. So many people are like, well, you tell me I'm like, what's her face
Leslie
on there?
Leslie Knope. You are just like her.
You
not
said
politically.
You're Except just like Leslie Biden. Knope. She loves Hillary.
And Joe Biden.
And Joe Biden.
Both of them. So everything but that.
Yeah, everything except the core
except
beliefs
for
of the character.
Your policies and your politics.
So for the people who do watch Parks and Rec and do listen to the show, what is it about Leslie Knope that you think I am like? Save apparently her entire political structure.
Yes. Can I say what I think you're like? And then we can get maybe some people to write on Facebook if they watch it.
No, I don't want other people's opinion. I'm scared of theirs.
Homies, I know you watch Parks and Rec, and you know what I'm talking about when I say that Annie is like Leslie Knope. She is...
And this I don't even know if I'm offended or not.
She is an idea machine. She never stops, ever.
Organized.
Organized. I mean, like, insanely organized, willing to help out every single person, no matter how long it takes. You have all of
these are nice things.
She has a tiny pony.
How does somebody like this, like Hillary Clinton? What's wrong with them?
Well, and Leslie too. I wouldn't say she is now like the new wave feminist, but she is a feminist to some degree, and that's what I think her love of Hillary Clinton. That's where a lot of it plays.
I'm not opposed to feminism, but I think that they've. Can I say the word bastardized feminism? Mm-hmm.
Hijacked.
I think. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, they're. Yeah. They're both good.
Both. Yeah.
Three. I like yours better. It's two syllables. you know, like the idea of equality. I'm all for equality. And I've worked in a male dominated industry my entire professional life, but I've never felt ever. I mean, I'm in news talk. Well, you're gonna see a lot more men in news talk than you're gonna see women. Mm-hmm. I started in sports talk, as even more so, you know, locker room kind of an atmosphere where if you're gonna go into this, there's not gonna be an equal amount of men and women. That was one of the most interesting things about when Entercom bought our stations, is we went from having sister stations of KSHE and The Point to Y98 and KZK. It was like, I mean, Katie, you and I were like, there's a lot of women here.
Yes, totally.
It's great. Mm-hmm. It was exciting. But we've been in this male-dominated industry. I never have looked at it like I inherently was unequal or lesser or anything because there were less of me. I just assumed that more women were interested in other things and that it may be a little different for a woman to be like, yeah, I'd like to get into sports broadcasting. It was me that was different, not everybody else around me. And I usually notice that the harder I worked, the more I think as a female being involved in these industries, if I would prove that I was there to work hard and that I knew what I was doing, sometimes I think it was almost to my advantage, you know?
Like, that's a lesson you taught me when I was an intern, for sure.
You got to work hard. Nobody's going to give you anything. But once you get in, people will work to protect you even when you don't need protecting. And you got to be very conscious of that. So, I mean, there's feminism in that, but not this version of feminism that exists right now that says that we have to punish men for the sins of their forefathers. That's dumb. And I'm not raising my kids that way. Certainly not raising my son that way. And I am not raising my daughters to be victims, that's for sure. Mark Cox is going to join us when we come back. We're going to ask him about the shutdowns in Missouri, how it's going, and how these restaurants are fighting back. Can't wait to talk to Mark Cox in just a minute. Stay here.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.